welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
So hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and I am here with the author of a really interesting book called Dead 11. Why don't you introduce yourself and kind of give us like the elevator pitch for this book, because it's so interesting and it's hard for me to even describe to people.
I am more than happy to. So my name is Jimmy Giuliano and I'm the author of Dead 11. And the elevator pitch for Dead 11 is there's a woman named Willow Stone who is grieving the death of her young son from about a year and a half ago. And she travels to this mysterious island off the Door County Peninsula in Wisconsin called Clifford Island, because she thinks that it might have something to do with the death of her son. And while she spends time on this island, she realizes that they seem to be stuck in the past. And she's there for about 2 months, and then Willow goes missing, and then her brother Harper comes looking for her, and he picks up the trail. And he's exploring the mythology of this island. And you're right, it's hard to get any more into it without getting into like spoilery territory.
Yeah, it's really, first of all, it's really interesting. And, you know, like, again, like, I want to talk, there's a lot of like mini stories that kind of come before the meat of the story. And they're all very interesting. You know, there's stories about people who, you know, like they have their big things that come into it is, you know, people have their routines and what happens when your routine is broken by somebody dying, which is, you know, like you can't do anything about that. Like it's, you know, like you separate from someone, your routine is broken, but that person still exists. If they die, even if it's like the most mundane thing, that it doesn't. And again, here we go with like stuff that I don't want to talk too much about because it's spoilery. But so first of all, immediately when I started reading this book, I wanted to see if Clifford Island was real.
Oh, good.
There is a Clifford Island, but it's not that one. And it's like, I think on the East Coast, it's not, you know, where this one is. Everyone has like, it's like the world stopped in 1994.
Right.
Yep. Which I have to ask, why 1994? That was like such like a weird throwback for me, because I think I was in high school in 94.
I was 13. Like, yeah.
And you know, there are things that come up that make me laugh, because you mentioned like there are these t-shirts that people wear, like these co-ed naked t-shirts, and for those who were not around during this time, they were the weirdest thing. It's like there were these t-shirts and it would be like co-ed naked, I don't know, like lacrosse or something. Yeah. And like half of them didn't even make a lot of sense. Like it was like they were grasping for straws at the end.
Like, I feel like someone got really rich off of that.
Oh, 100%. People got really rich off of it. But like it caused a big thing with the teachers, because they'd be like,
yeah. They were like banned, you know, from my school. Like,
yeah, they were banned from the school. It's like, oh, that's not appropriate. But then like, you know, like if you wanted to be one of the cool kids, you'd come in wearing the shirts.
Totally.
Again, you know, like this is not the meat of the story, but it was just like little nice touches like that that kind of brought me back to those days. And like, oh yeah, I remember that. So why 1994, I think, is my, like specifically 1994.
That's such a good question. So I think I picked 1994 specifically because I wanted to go into the past, but not like super far, you know? So I knew that like the 80s were hot when I started writing the book in 2019. So like Stranger Things was like peaking, and I was just kind of thinking, you know, I feel like 80s nostalgia is totally in. I feel like 90s nostalgia, you know, might be next. So that was like one of the reasons. But I specifically picked 1994 for a couple reasons. Number one, the O.J. Simpson stuff. Like,
oh my God, yes.
That is like one of those things where I remember coming home from like a Little League baseball game and like where I was sitting, still in my dirty and dusty uniform, watching the O.J. Simpson car chase, like with my family. It was just, it's like stuck in my brain and I'll never forget it. And it's such like a seminal moment in like American history. And I guess even pop culture history. I know it's like a weird thing to say because it's such a horrible thing, like at its core, but it's such
a 110%. Yeah. But I mean, like there was even like a reference to it in one of the Shrek movies, I think. Like,
I know. It,
yeah. Like
it's what, wild.
Think about it. It's like this guy, you know, I mean, okay, fine, whatever. But like, sure. Yeah. We don't have to go there, but you know, a woman was murdered and her boyfriend were murdered brutally, and this person was thought of as doing it, and yeah, it's like nobody remembers that part. It's the Bronco chase,
and I think it's the verdict like a year and a half or 2 years later too, and maybe yep. You remember, like I was in high school and they literally stopped class, like every TV in the school turned on the verdict. And I remember even thinking at the time, I'm like, this is just so weird that we're doing this.
I was in the library of Syosset High School when that verdict came in. They made an announcement over the loudspeaker, I think. Unless like this is like some my brain pretending, but I know somebody that's where I was when I heard the verdict, and I was like, oh yeah, okay.
So like I knew just from like a writing perspective, I was like, this would be interesting. If people have routines, and one of the routines that they have is that everyone watches the O.J. Simpson car chase literally every single night, I'm like, that's a good hook. Like that, like that's interesting. That might want to make a reader, like that would propel them to kind of keep going. So that was one thing with 94. Another thing with 94, and this is a little bit more random, I'm a big fan of the band Phish. And what they say, what I read once about Phish is that, like, if you're a big Phish fan, basically what you do is you listen to five shows from the 90s over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, yeah, then I laughed and I was like, oh my gosh, that's kind of true. And one of my favorite Phish shows is from June 17th, 1994, which is the same night as the OJ chase. And I'm like, I've listened to this show so many times. And I was like, what if someone had to listen to the show every day for the rest of their lives? And there's a character in the book who does listen to that show every single night. He doesn't mention Phish by name in the book, but it's Phish. And it kind of like grew out from there. It was kind of those two things that were kind of like the seeds of choosing that year in particular.
That was a really interesting year. That was the year that Kurt Cobain died. Was it not? I think it was 94. I'm gonna fact check myself as I speak to you. Okay. But yeah, it was a really interesting book, and it was nostalgia horror, as you said. Yes, it's really, really hot. And it was just it was a really freaky rabbit hole to go down, and sort of like as you kind of start wondering, like, okay, how does this whole thing that happens in the beginning turn into something that's relevant in the bigger picture of the story? April 1994, another place
got
that
it.
I remember exactly where I was when I heard that. You just kind of wonder like how this sort of plays into the bigger picture of the story, and it does. And it's almost like the more you read about what Willow found and the more you read about what Harper found, the more you kind of start, like, it's almost like in your rearview mirror and you're like, oh, is this why that was relevant? And then, you know, everything just sort of falls into this weird place. But man, this was quite a story. So like, you started writing this in 2019. What was your process like? So you wrote this through the pandemic, where we were literally like living the same day over
I think that might have been something to do with it, Jessica, like for sure. Like that probably played a role in the story. It like the process of it, oh my goodness, it's I went through so many drafts of this. I probably like went through 6 or 7 pretty heavy drafts. And I'm not just talking like Microsoft Word spell check here. I'm like pretty heavy going in and changing a lot of things. It actually started out, if you can believe it, as an 8,000 word short story. Somehow it was,
I can actually believe that. Yes. Because sometimes you start something and you realize that there's more to it than just that.
It's totally what happened. Yeah. Like at the time I was writing a lot of short stories and that was kind of like my bread and butter. And my manager, Josh, he was like, you know, why don't we write? He's like, you have this really good idea. Cause I told him about the idea. And he's like, yeah, write it up in his words as a short, as a short story. And then we'll see what we can do with it. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, sure. So I wrote it as a short story and I sent it to him. And he's like, this is way too short. He's like, could you like make this longer? And I was like, sure. Okay. So then I took that 8,000 words and I wrote it into a 40,000 word novella. And happily, that's what landed me my agent, Liz. And then Liz is like, I love this. Could this be a novel? And I was like, okay. I'm like, sure. So then I spent a lot of time doubling that. And then it went to like 80,000 words. And that's what landed me my book deal at Dutton and my editor, Lindsay. And with Lindsay's help, Lindsay Rose, absolutely brilliant. The 80,000 word version that she had went through a few drafts with Lindsay and we wound up with Dead 11 as it is today. And it just, like you said, it just kind of kept growing and growing because with the mythology of the island, as readers will come like to find, it's like there was just so many stories that are to be told. And like you were saying earlier, everything does kind of like tie in to what's actually going on Clifford Island. Like my mom is reading the book for the second time right now. And she's just like, oh my gosh. She's like, I'm reading all these things at the beginning now. And it's just, she's like, they hit differently because now I realize like all these breadcrumbs were totally, you know, laid out. And that's something that me and Lindsay worked so hard on is having everything tie together. So it was quite a process.
It was quite a read. So, yeah, I definitely appreciate hearing about it. So wait a second. So how many words was it by the end? Because I read an electronic version of it, an e-galley. So, you know, like when you get like a physical book, you're like, oh, you know, you can kind of gauge physically. But yeah, how many words did it come out to?
It landed, I think, at 110,000. And when I was like going through drafts with my editor, I was like, I'm like, because this is my debut book. And I'm like, Lindsay, should I be concerned about like, and she was just like, no. She's like, just tell the story, you know? And I'm like, okay. And it just kind of, it landed in a good place. Like, I think it looks thicker. Well, I think it reads faster than it looks because there are like text message threads, interviews, and those like kind of fly by pretty quick when you're reading them. So yeah, it is 448 pages, but I think it reads pretty quick, you know, a lot of punchy chapters.
Oh, it does. No, it is a real snappy read.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing I just want to ask, like, so how did you name the characters? Willow is a name that is popular now, and I am a huge Buffy fan, so like the first Willow... Okay. Yeah, the first Willow I ever encountered was Willow from Buffy. And I don't think I've ever encountered a male Harper before. So would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I am really, really bad at naming characters. I have like, it's something I really struggle at. I don't know how I landed on Willow. I think I realized a few weeks ago that, because I work at a high school, and the street I turn onto literally every day, and I just realized it is Willow Street. And I'm like, maybe that was subconsciously in my head. so I think that's where that came from. And then there's another character, Lily, I think I kind of went with the whole like floral growing like willow lily kind
Yeah,
of like.
I was gonna ask about that.
I think that was deliberate. I think that was me doing my Pirates of the Caribbean thing because there's Jack Sparrow and Elizabeth Swann. I guess love that movie.
I feel like a complete idiot because I didn't make that connection until just now.
I think I did it accidentally, to be
my
honest.
Mind.
And Harper was named after a famous Disney Imagineer named Harper Goff. I'm a big like Disney parks, like Disney history fan. And I'm like, oh, I just love the name Harper. I'm just going to name him Harper.
So wait a second, I have to ask, because this, there is like some, a little bit of like, you know, there's a lot of lore in this book, and being
Yes.
a Disney park person, are you by chance a Defunctland fan?
I love Defunctland.
So yeah, I had to say, I'm like, something about this book has like, you know, just sort of like that deep, like unknown history thing that Defunctland does very, very well. For those who haven't listened, you do not know Defunctland. It is a YouTube show run by somebody who is he never shows his face, but
Hey, he's very mysterious, yeah.
Oh, he's amazing. But
He's awesome.
Yeah, that would be like that. That's like a bucket list guest who would never come on the podcast. But he's not just Disney, but he's just like a lore of amusement park aficionado. But like specifically, Disney does a lot of just backstory on certain rides, foods in Disney. You know, why things work, why things didn't. But Defunctland implies that it's defunct, like things that have passed. It's very interesting and funny, and I highly recommend it. But I also highly recommend Dead 11 because it has that whole like backstory, what's going on, how did this get the way it got, feel to it, and it is just very readable and just a lot of fun.
That is so kind of you to say.
It's a dark ride of a book.
Yeah,
The dark ride of 1994.
Yeah, like one of my favorite blurbs that I got was like, you know, like nothing this scary should be half as much fun, or nothing this dark or scary should be half as much fun. And that was like a tricky balance to strike in the book, because like it is fun, but I also wanted to have it be creepy and like slightly horrific. But then you also have Willow, who is grieving the death of her son, which is obviously such a horrible, horrible thing. So early on in the process, that was a tough thing to kind of like balance who Willow was as a character and not have her emotions like really like truly drag down like what could be the really fun story. So that was like a tricky balance to strike for sure. And what you said about Clifford, like early on, you were wondering if it was a real place. And that's like, that's something that I want people to walk away from too. Like, I really wanted it to be like for people that don't, or people that even know like Door County, Wisconsin, which is like a huge tourist place. And my family and I have gone there every year for the past like 6 years. We've probably been there 10 times. Like, we love Door County, Wisconsin. Even people that go there, I want them to read this book and be like, wait, is Clifford Island real? Like, I feel like it could be.
Oh, totally. It was just really good. It had a real like creepypasta feel to it, which.
Yeah, which is kind of like my roots, which kind of like seeped in to the book. Like to me, it almost kind of feels like a really long short story. Like it has like a short story punchy pace to it, but it just keeps on going.
Well, it's awesome.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, do you have any favorite books that you have read recently, horror or otherwise? And also just like, is there anything like any obscure thing that you really, really like that you want to draw people's attention to? Just like we did for Defunctland, which shouldn't be obscure, but I feel like most of the people I ask them about, they're just like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my goodness. Well, the first part of your question, I am absolutely in love with Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. That book just like blew me away. I absolutely devoured it. And I was like, I can't believe it took me this long to read this book, because it's been out for, I want to say like a year, right? Like, is that right? Or like a little longer than that, I think. But it was just so readable and like, I don't know. It's one of those things, like I read it and then I went to work and my coworker Laura, I'm like, Laura, you must stop whatever you're reading right now. Stop reading it and read this book. It was that good. And as far as the second part of your question, something obscure that I'm into. Ooh, that's a tough one. Cause I almost would have said like Defunct Land for sure. Can I just double down on Defunct Land?
Let's triple down
on Defunct Land. Like it is so interesting. And like you said, yeah, it's about like theme park and amusement park stuff that like doesn't exist anymore. And like, what's the history of things that have come to pass? You know, like the other day when the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, they announced that it was going to be closing, Defunct Land started trending because it was just like, oh, Defunct Land's going to do a really good piece on this.
I had actually, it's so funny because I remember when they, like when it first came out and people were like, yeah, this is not going to be great. There were some plugs like, I can't wait to watch the Defunct Land episode about this hotel.
Yeah, it was quite the internet saying, I told you so. Like people were really dancing on the grave of the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser.
And this is like completely outside of Dead 11, but I do hope, like, you know, like maybe just like make it a regular hotel, like where people.
Yeah. Do the dinner theater
not
stuff
that much
there.
Money, but like I don't need the dinner theater. Just like, you know, it'd be cool to just like be in a hotel that's Star Wars-y. Why not?
Yeah, and I know like when they initially announced all the Galaxy's Edge stuff, like a lot of the stuff that they had promised are not in the actual land, like roaming droids, the dinner theater, things like the fighting between Kylo and Rey. It's like, oh, it's not in the land, but if you wanted to see it, you have to go to the hotel. So it was almost like putting it behind a paywall, I think someone called it. So hopefully that stuff seeps
100%.
Back into the, yeah.
And my family and I just went to Galaxy's Edge, and it is fabulous. Like the
Love
actual
it.
Park. I don't
it's
know about
stunning.
Hotels
it is absolutely
because I couldn't
stunning.
Afford it. this was great. Are you are you writing anything else at the moment? Are we going to revisit anything?
I'm working on my next book. I don't think I can say too much about it just yet. Just that it's definitely. I would say it definitely has some shared DNA with Dead 11. Like it could, they're probably in the same family tree. So I'm excited to be able to talk about it in the future.
Yay. Well, hopefully you'll be back to chat about it with us.
Oh, I hope so. This was a lot of fun.
Yes. All right. Well, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest today was
Jimmy Giuliano.
And we're calling out Kevin Perjurer on Defunct Land, because not calling out, but we're calling out to you. We're saying hello because we both love you.
Yeah, get Kevin on the show sometime. I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, please. That's never going to happen. But Kevin should read Dead 11, and so should you. We're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode. Thank you.